LYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. We are joined in studio by Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Ray's a frequent contributor, has been for a couple, 2.5 years. And when we're not on the air, Ray, we get to talk hoops.
That's right.
So what's more important, hoops or creation science?
Well, for you, it's hoops, but for me, it's creation science.
I'm teasing. But it is fun to talk about hoops because you go way back. You've been watching the Lobos a long time. Your friend Ron Nelson was a roommate, great basketball player for the Lobos.
Exactly.
Fun days, and I'm anxious to see what Richard Pitino has in store for us.
Yeah. In fact, I've... still waiting to take you on the court.
Oh, you want see that one-on-one thing?
Yeah, see if you can stop my three-point shot.
Yeah, we'd have to postpone this radio show for a few weeks as I have knee surgery if we get to do that. I am done with the playing days, my friend.
Oh, no.
Hey, we're talking a lot to parents and we're talking a lot to young people. I hope that we'll listen to this show because... we've all been inundated. I was raised in the Albuquerque Public Schools, not a criticism of APS, but they teach evolution in their schools. And I remember the charts, especially when I was in fifth grade. They had these cool charts with a monkey and then slowly stands more erect. And then there was this little gap before a man was born, and that was called the missing link. And what I've learned, Ray, since talking with you and, of course, being a Christian for a number of years is that they're actually, and I'm going to say this as adamantly as I can, and this is not to comment about evolutionists per se. I'm sure they're very nice people and so forth. But there is no science to evolution, ladies and gentlemen. It is a completely ridiculous theory, and I hope you'll listen to Ray today. We're going to talk about mutations and how those are a vehicle or supposed to be a vehicle for the transition of species.
Actually, they are the mechanism, in fact, the only means by which evolution could even conceivably be possible. So, yeah, we need to talk about the very beginnings of evolution and the mechanism that's supposed to make it work.
Well, let's back up now and talk about the issue of creation science, and evolution. And again, Ray, you've defined science for us before. There's really not creation science and evolutionary science. There's just science.
There's science, but today science operates from two very distinct worldviews. In other words, there's a secular non-biblical worldview, and then there's our worldview. We come from a different perspective, so we have different assumptions. Now, all of science operates on a certain number of assumptions. One of the main assumptions that what I call secular science, or what most people recognize as just ordinary science, is they come from a naturalistic perspective. In other words, unless you can explain things in the natural realm from a naturalistic perspective, then any other data is thrown out. So the difference between what we believe as creation scientists is that we believe that there is a God and he's a creator and he has revealed himself. And he's revealed a lot about the creation itself. In fact, there's a lot in the Bible about the natural realm. And that's our starting point. And if you start there, then we believe that everything came about as a result of a creator rather than natural processes.
We should plug this book that we're still waiting on called...
Is God Shouting?
And the premise of your book, Ray, is that... not only has God revealed himself, but the creation itself that he has put together shouts
his
about
existence.
The creator.
Yeah. Right, exactly. In fact, he has built into the creation, and part of the purpose of the creation is to reveal God. Psalm 19:1, we've talked about it. The heavens declare the glory of God. So if you study astrophysics, you ought to detect something of who God is. Romans 1 tells us that the creation reveals the invisible attributes, his omnipotent power, and other aspects of who God is. So if you study any area of science, you should detect that behind it is a creator and an intelligent designer, because there's lots of design in the creation.
Ray, you've done a lot of studying, but I'm going to reduce what you just said to something that most New Mexicans could really appreciate. And the reason we live here, you can drive 30, 45 minutes from almost any city in New Mexico, and you can be in the woods, and you can be away from city lights. So I want to encourage all of our listeners, drive out to one of these areas at night. Grab a lawn chair, maybe a little cool, dress warm. Sit back in your lawn chair when it gets dark, and you'll look up to the heavens. Be away from the city lights. And this isn't a scientific observation, but it is a spectacular, nonetheless, view of the heavens. And the stars in New Mexico are just incredible. And when you look at them, it wouldn't hurt you to have your Bible with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to just start to read some of these passages, the Psalm 119, read Romans 1, and you will begin to see that truly the heavens are revealing this. But then you can go to other places in New Mexico. Now, winter's coming, so you won't get to see some of the beautiful leaves and different things that we have. You get to see the beautiful colors changing now.
Right.
In fact, it's happening really rapidly. This might be the last weekend and all the leaves are going to drop. But if you go out to any of our beautiful state parks and national parks, you're going to appreciate God's creation. And nature does truly shout about God's existence.
And that's just the beauty aspect. If you look at it even scientifically, you're going to find that there's so much built-in intelligence and evidence of design. And by the way, you don't even have to go where it's not obscured by the lights. But if you look even tonight, the moon and Jupiter are very close. Jupiter is the brightest object that you see in the south. And if you are careful, just to the right of Jupiter is Saturn, and you can see Saturn, Jupiter, and the moon, and you can do that around 7, 8, 9 o'clock tonight. That's where they're aligned right now.
And let's talk about some of the – this isn't on our list, so I'm diverging, but look at
the – Yeah, you always do. You always catch me off guard.
No, but I know these don't catch you off guard, because like when you look at the orbit of the planets, when you look at the distance of the Earth from the sun, all you have to do is look at the other planets say – wow, is this just a cosmic accident? Was this the Big Bang theory?
No way.
We just came about. I told a young man that I saw at Sandy High School, and he was asking some interesting questions. He said, "Do you really believe in God?" And I said, "Do you have a cell phone?" He says, "Yeah, I have a cell phone." I said, "Let me see it."
Yeah.
And he pulled it out of his pocket.
Right.
I don't know that anyone under 18 doesn't have a cell phone. Maybe over, let's say over 12 and less than 18.
Right.
I mean, you're talking, they can't even function without cell phones. Anyway, I diverge. But I said to him, I said, when you look at your cell phone, do you think that somebody just wished there was a cell phone and it just put itself together? Or did somebody actually have to assemble it and engineer it and put all the parts? I mean, can you imagine the process and the complexities that went into building your cell phone? And he goes, oh, yeah, and he's a lot smarter than me. He's going to be an engineering student. So he starts talking to me about, you know, some of the chips and other things that are in cell phones and how the heat disbursement is really amazing in these little computers. So then I said to him, do you think your body is more or less complicated than that cell phone?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a good question.
And he said, oh, absolutely more complicated. I said, not only that, but my friend Ray Mondragon would tell you that the DNA strand in a single cell in your body is a zillion times
more complicated
yep. than your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Did that happen by accident? I mean, you just told me your cell phone didn't happen by accident.
Right.
So I said, that is not a proof of God, but it is a
evidence.
It's evidence of God.
Right.
It's logical. It's scientific through observation. It's like does science speak that there is a creator?
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Every area of science, in fact, everywhere that you look, biology, astrophysics we mentioned, chemistry even, there's evidence that there's design and intricacy and evidence of an intelligent designer that points back to the only one that would qualify is what's described in our Bible, is the God of the universe, the creator of all things.
Now, Ray, you haven't gone out of your way to disprove evolution. But evolution has gone out of its way to try to disprove the existence of God.
Well, evolution disproves itself.
Yeah.
And if we get into mutations, we'll see what they tell us about evolution. So, yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the weak points to evolution as science?
Well, it has virtually no evidence, as you said at the very beginning, and the evidence that they do provide, there's far better explanations for the data that they utilize to try to support evolution. And from a different perspective, the same data, we will look at the same data. So the first thing that I would ask an evolutionist is give me the data that supports what you believe. And we can evaluate it scientifically. And if you do that, step by step, every one of the areas that they will bring up can be not only refuted, but can be explained from the perspective of a designer and the God of the Bible.
But many of these people, especially in the curriculum that you would find in a public school system, it's almost like they're not allowed to mention God.
Well, they're not. I mean, they're controlled by the secular mindset, public funding, and unbelievers control the system. So really, a Christian teacher that might even want to present an alternative viewpoint is hindered and sometimes even fired if he brings up an alternative explanation to evolution.
Mm. Yeah.
So really, it's not teachers' faults per se, but it's more the system that prevents exposure to creation science.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Talk to us about what we talked about last time, the basic assumptions and the relationship between science and Scripture.
We start from the perspective of a creator, in other words, the God that created all things. And secondly, so we assume that. We can't prove it, but we assume that there's a God based on evidence, based on the evidence that we have. So it's not just a blind faith. And then from there, we believe that God, in fact, he tells us in his word that he has revealed himself. And we can take that revelation and what he talks about concerning the natural realm and compare it to reality. And when we compare the natural realm to what God has said about it, it gives evidence that he is, in fact, behind it all. And that's the starting point. So we start science from the assumption that God has revealed certain things to us. And from that, we have a foundation to do good investigation in the science realm. And I've mentioned, in fact, last time we talked about the origins of modern science is actually from a biblical perspective. But over time, things always degenerate. Mm-hmm. Cultures degenerate. Everything degenerates. And even the scientific realm has abandoned their roots and, I think, degenerated from a biblical perspective. So those are some of the assumptions.
Well, we're going to talk about mutations today. And, again, mutations are essential for the theory of evolution to actually take place. You've talked about this to us before, but I like it so much because people can take this information. They can write down what you're talking about. They can listen to this show on abqconnect.online, and it will equip them to address questions that they might get if they're a high school student about to go to a university. Because I will tell you, I was inundated as a student, and this was some years ago, back in 1976 when I first went to college. Very first thing, I went to anthropology course, and all of a sudden they're talking about evolution.
Right.
And what's funny is it took so long for me to finally figure out, what are they talking about? There's no science to this.
Right.
This is just a bunch of stuff. It's literally propaganda, mm-hmm. and there's no basis in science for it. If you look at the scientific method, And right. and that can be defined in a number of ways, but the way I understand it is if a hypothesis is correct, that means you can take something that you see, you observe in nature, you can take it into a laboratory, and you can duplicate those processes.
Right.
And that's never been done. And there's no evidence in the archaeological record, the geological record, the anthropological record
right.
of anything that evolution talks about.
Well, there are no actual observations of things from the natural realm, non-living things, gathering together and bringing life about. That has never been observed, and it's never been observed that a single cell has mutated into something more advanced, multiple cell creature. And then on the chain, none of that has ever been observed. So all of that is theory, if you will, or I don't even think it rises to the level of theory, but it's man's ideas. And the bottom line is the secular world, the unbeliever, has to have an explanation. Where did I come from? He has to have an explanation. Is there something behind everything that I observe? And really, evolution is nothing more than a substitute for the God of the Bible. Now, men, I don't think, are necessarily conscious of that, but they have to come up with a different explanation that leaves God out. And that permeates into the scientific realm as well.
We are with Ray Mondragone. He is a teacher with Creation Science Fellowship. He has a website called forhisglorynm.com. Want to also mention that Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico meets the third Tuesday of each month. They meet at Faith Bible Church, 9600 Central Avenue Southeast. By the way, I don't do this very much, but I should shout out to David Broersma. He is the pastor there, and he provides the venue for those presentations. What a cool thing that he does there. The Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico website is csfnm.org. A lot of free information available, both on Ray's website and Creation Science Fellowship and others, creation.com, and there's a lot. And by the way, I don't want you to go to any of these websites and believe what they say.
That's right.
Check it out. Have a conversation.
Right.
We'll be back with Ray Mondragone right after these messages.
Men, do you desire to study the deeper things of God? Cross Christian Fellowship College goes in-depth in apologetics, teaching, and doctrines. Study the difference between Calvinism and Arminianism, views of the rapture, eisegesis, and exegesis. This special mentorship-style college is low-cost and only one night a week. Get information online at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org.
Here's Skip Heitzig with advice on a great spiritual workout.
Spiritual growth is not accidental. You don't wake up one day, look in the mirror and go, oh my goodness, I'm so mature. Spiritual growth is intentional, not accidental. Spiritual maturity is the human cooperation with the divine operation.
More solid advice from Skip.
You are never told in the Bible, lounge in the Spirit. You'll never find a verse. Look it up. Lounge. You'll never find it.
See the Skip Heitzig channel on YouTube.
You'll never find something that says, veg out in the Spirit. No, it says, walk in the Spirit.
Walk in the Spirit.
It means you actually have to cooperate by putting one foot in front of the other and engage in the process of working out something that has been worked in.
Now this from Skip.
It means you actually have to cooperate by putting one foot in front of the other and engage in the process of working out something that has been worked in.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. We are with Ray Mondragone, Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico. Ray, are you frequently talking and giving presentations for Creation Science Fellowship?
I don't have anything scheduled in the immediate future, but just about every time I go out of the country, I do something related to creation science. The course that I taught in Ukraine was related.
Are there actual scientists that are involved with Creation Science Fellowship in New Mexico?
There's a lot of scientists. In fact, Creation Science Fellowship was started by people from Los Alamos National Labs and Sandia National Labs. Now, both of them have gone on and moved out of Albuquerque, but there's still people that work at Sandia. And there's people at Los Alamos that are believers that believe in creation science. And if they were in town, they would visit our meetings.
Yeah.
So absolutely. In fact, some of these scientists are world-class scientists.
Yeah, dealing with all kinds of things. Everything from
physics, nuclear engineering, all kinds of areas.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Well, we're going to talk about the so-called mechanism for evolution today. Ray, take us through that.
Well, before we start, we need to understand that this is crucial to evolution, and most scientists acknowledge this, and I've got hundreds of quotes, essentially, from scientists. I'll give probably the clearest and easiest to quote, but Ernst Mayr, world-class scientist, he says, "It must not be forgotten that mutation is the ultimate," and you need to underline ultimate, "ultimate source of all genetic variation found in the natural populations and the only new material available for natural selection to work." So in other words, without the mechanism of mutations, there is no evolution.
Okay, well, I want to stop here. Most of us hear about mutations related to COVID-19.
Right.
And that is happening. There, in fact, I'm told by Los Alamos, people don't know this, but Los Alamos National Laboratories is tracking all the variants of the COVID-19, and now there's thousands of variants already. The virus has mutated.
Right.
Does that mean that's evolution?
No, it's actually devolution. And if you remember, what was it, about 3 or 4 months ago, we had Linda Walkup, who's a cellular biologist, PhD. She discussed this whole issue and tried to explain that what we have is really a degrading of the original virus, if there's an original one, and it's not evolution. It certainly is adapting to the environment, but there's no new information gained as a result of these mutations.
And so let's back up. So an evolutionist believe that, and I'm just throwing stuff out here, okay, but they believe that a fish is swimming in the ocean, and all of a sudden that fish, adapting to its environment or whatever, grows 2 equal length legs and lungs at the same time and walks out of the water. Now, I'm obviously being facetious, but at the same time I'm not, because that just can't happen.
Well, none of those steps have ever been observed. So it's just an idea.
There's nothing in the fossil record?
The fossil record shows abrupt differences and abrupt changes, but there's no links. There's no missing links in any of the animal kingdom in the fossil record.
I love it.
In fact, the fossil record today amongst the evolutionists is a major problem for them because of these gaps. Now, when Darwin was around, he had hoped that the fossil record would be the savior of his theory, and the area of paleontology and the area of geology was relatively new, so he anticipated that as we made more discovery of more fossils, that these missing links would be found. But actually the opposite has happened. So they've had to modify their theory. Today they have the idea that you have these leaps of evolution, where you have from one creature, you have a jump.
So there was gradual changes was the initial hypothesis.
That's the idea.
And now there's leaps. That seems mathematically more impossible.
Well, yeah, it is, because the fossil record doesn't provide the links. So the fossil record today is actually an enemy to evolution, and it actually supports things that we believe in creation science that will develop when we talk about things like the Genesis flood.
Yeah.
So
talk about the mechanisms for evolution, and I know there's 7 things that basically you've illustrated that prove that mutations are not an adequate mechanism for evolution?
Well, a mutation is a sudden small change in the DNA code of every creature. It occurs in the genes, and you have to have those passed on to succeeding generations.
By the way, before we go into the details, there are mutations that have happened even in human bodies, right?
Oh, mutations occur all the time. We're not saying that mutations don't exist, but what we're saying is that mutations are not an adequate mechanism to make evolution work. In fact, the very opposite. And these seven things are actually the results of scientific investigation. And what I've got are seven conclusions that evolutionists have come to concerning 160 years of research. These are the conclusions that they've come to concerning.
Okay, now I'm confused. You're
mutations.
Telling us that evolutionists have come up with these conclusions.
That's right. Yeah, the ones that have primarily studied mutations are evolutionists because they were anxious to have a mechanism or to demonstrate that mutations are an adequate mechanism. But the result of – now, there's been some creation scientists involved as well, but we are such a small minority that the majority of the researchers that have come up with these conclusions are evolutionists. Absolutely. And this is starting with the time frame of Darwin. So we're about 160-plus years from there. These are the conclusions, and there's seven of them that I've kind of gathered together for simplicity. There's others, but these are kind of major categories that tell us that mutations really don't work. They do exist, and they do happen. In fact, sometimes in a radical way. For example, even the Bible speaks of some mutants. I don't know if you knew about it.
No.
Well, you did as soon as I mention it. but if you remember, I think it's in 2 Samuel. I don't remember the exact chapter. It mentions these people that had six fingers and six toes. 2 Samuel, I think it's chapter right around chapter 21, somewhere in there. And there's mentions of people with more than five fingers and five toes in each hand and each limb. So that's a mutation. In other words, that's a deviation from the normal everyday.
Yeah, and I mean, we have birth defects in babies.
Yeah,
we
absolutely.
Have different things. I know that.
Well, that's different. Birth defects are different. A mutation has to be passed on.
Oh, I see. So it's something that replicates in the species. Now, I know something that I think you've mentioned before, like our appendix. I know there's a theory that that used to have a certain purpose, and now it doesn't really do anything in our bodies.
Right. They believe that it's a leftover from an evolutionary stage of the past and that we've evolved past that or adapted differently from that.
But what we're talking about is not small changes in creatures or a species. We're actually talking about a transition. Like, Ray, they're trying to tell us that an NFL football player came from an amoeba. Am I wrong about that?
Well, no, but they do say that this was gradual over millions and millions of years in order to get from a one-celled animal to human beings. So they do propose that these changes were slow, that these changes were gradual. But that's the problem, is not only does the fossil record not reflect that, but really even biology does not acknowledge that as well. And I've said before that some of these newer sciences that deal at the cellular and the genetic level actually totally destroy the idea of this gradual processes. It actually supports the evidence for a designer. There's more evidence of a designer. There's complexity at a level, and it's all together in such a way that you have to have all of the components in place. We've used the illustration of a mouse trap. a very simple contraption, but you have to have all five elements of a mousetrap all together, all functioning at the same time, or the mousetrap doesn't work. And when we're talking at the cellular level, you have to have millions of things all together, all at once, in order for a single cell to live and survive and to replicate. Yeah. So the idea of evolution really is not scientific at all, particularly at the cellular and the microbiological level.
And again, to restate what you've said earlier, there are seven conclusions as to why mutations are not an adequate mechanism, and these conclusions have been developed by people who would identify themselves as evolutionary scientists.
Yes, right. And most scientists know this. Most biologists know this. But because they don't have an alternative, a lot of this is not mentioned much.
But Ray, I just have to stop and say, okay, these are these very scientists, they're having the conversation. They're deploying the scientific method. They're using their brains, which we believe are God-given.
Right.
And they're being led, and they've mm-hmm. come to conclusions. Why in the world are we still indoctrinating our children in the public schools with this information?
Because the secular world does not have an alternative explanation that leaves God out. So this is the only thing that they have, so they have to continually defend it.
So we're just going to keep talking about something that has nothing to do with science. That's why I got really nervous when COVID happened, because I hear all these bureaucrats in the United States government talking about science, science, science. Well, the definition of science in our government means something way different than it means to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they just look at the science that supports their political agenda and not
but
really
they don't
science.
Even really look at science. They just look at whatever good ideas support mm-hmm. their political agenda.
Yep, and that's true in this whole area of evolution as well. So that's a good illustration of how it works itself down into the science realm.
We are going to take a break, and we're going to spend our last 30 minutes together going through the seven conclusions that are the result of 160 years, did you say,
of approximately science? Since the time of Darwin.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting stuff. We'll be back with Ray Mondragon. I hope you'll stay
Please
with us.
Please save the date for the Albuquerque Christian Children's Home annual holiday affair, benefit dinner, and auction Saturday, November 15th at the Embassy Suites Hotel. 5 p.m. Our annual holiday affair, benefit dinner, and auction is a fun way for us to share the successes of our children and thank you for your prayers and financial support. To buy tickets, donate auction items, or make a donation, call 898-5520. More information is available at acch4kids.org.
Here's John Chitwood with an automotive analogy.
Wouldn't you agree that most people have never even read the small owner's manual that's found in the glove box of all their vehicles? That is because they think they know it already and will only open and read it in a time of an emergency. Sound familiar? There is an owner's manual that you do need to read and memorize. It's God's written word, the Bible. God is the creator and the designer, and in the Bible you will find God's design and purpose for your life and how he made a way of salvation for you and me that we may have eternal life with him through his son, Jesus Christ. Let us remember what David said in Psalm 119, "Your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you."
An automotive analogy with John Chitwood of Southern Boulevard Automotive, 2300 Southern Boulevard in Rio Rancho, 892-2300, or southernblvdautomotive.com. Thank you, Southern Boulevard Automotive, for your support of KLYT. The Great Omission. That's what one author said the Great Mission has become. Obviously, not acceptable. At KLYT, we know this Great Mission task is one for the church. Through October, we're putting a spotlight on a global outpost for the gospel. Slave Velasinov serving with Calvary Church Global Missions in Croatia.
I believe that the Word of God is the only message for this broken world. The governments of this world are spending millions of dollars to cure the symptoms of the problem. And God has sent His Son to pay for the message with His blood. to cure the root of the problem, and this is sin.
Support this month for Slave Velasinov will go towards a new vehicle critical in assisting him and his team to be part of fulfilling the command of Jesus in our lifetime. Support this ministry at klyt.fm.
KLYT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086, or online at essenmacherdental.com. Ray Mondragon, teacher with Creation Science Fellowship of New Mexico and a professor with Chafer Seminary, is in studio with us today. I want to make sure that you know about his free resources. He has a lot of Bible study resources available at forhisglorynm.com. Also some articles and things that he's written, and he's coming up with a new book. Hopefully that'll be published sometime soon.
Yes, I haven't had the opportunity to really push it much recently just because of all the other things that I'm doing. But, yeah, I hope to get it published soon.
Yeah.
Need to find a publisher.
Well, and I have no idea what that process is, but
it's not an easy one.
And I hope that that comes together for you pretty soon. So let's start talking about some of these mechanisms and why they are not adequate to actually promote evolution.
Well, to start off with, they're rare. Relatively speaking, they're rare.
Now, let's clarify, because you said there's mutations happening all the time, but
right.
Now you're saying they're rare.
They're rare. That's why I say relative as well. If you know any biologist would tell you that right now our bodies are basically, our cells in our bodies are reproducing at a certain rate. I don't know the numbers, but the numbers are in the billions per whatever time frame, hours, or I don't know what the numbers are. But at that rate, there is nothing as accurate as the reproduction of cells in terms of the growth of the body or the repair of the body, all the processes that go into the reproducing of individual cells. And the rates are so high that when it comes down to the mistakes, which are mutations basically, The mutation is actually a mistake in the whole process of this reproduction. And in that sense, they're relatively rare. Now, some of the numbers, in other words, one mutation for every between 10,000 to a million reproductions or regenerations of cells. And that's relatively rare. Mm-hmm. And the evolutionist requires far more frequent mutations than what actually take place.
Even if what they are saying takes 10 million years. There's not enough years.
Not enough time. Yeah. So they're start off with, and evolutionists acknowledge this. This is their conclusion. Mm. They're too rare to be what evolution requires.
To be the mechanism for a one-celled living organism to have evolved into what we would see today as life.
Right. Exactly.
In all its forms.
Right. In various forms. So that's the starting point. They're relatively rare. The evolutionist doesn't have enough of them to produce what they claim actually happened. Secondly, and this is even more devastating, they are unpredictable. So they don't follow a sequence that would lead to progress. If anything, most of them are detrimental. In fact, that's another conclusion, but they're unpredictable. You might have something that appears to be positive and beneficial, but just as soon as the next generation, it either no longer replicates or it goes in the opposite direction, and you have mutations that are actually more negative. And that's actually the third one, is the majority of even these rare ones are harmful. So number three, they are harmful. In fact, H.J. Mueller, an evolutionist, says most mutations are bad. In fact, good ones are so rare we can consider them all bad. So that goes in the very opposite direction. So they're unpredictable, and the majority of them are not positive. The majority of them are harmful. So there's three conclusions, some of them related.
So again, the first three reasons why mutations are not an adequate mechanism is that they are rare comparatively. You're talking about a DNA strand and all the complexities of cell changes.
Right.
A cellular biologist, a molecular biologist, these people understand those complexities.
Right.
And people that are on the evolutionary track or would identify themselves that have said, look, these mutations are too rare for this to be an adequate mechanism.
Exactly.
They are also, when there is a mutation, they're so unpredictable. They don't happen in an order.
That's right. In other words, you would expect positive to build upon positive to build upon positive until you have a significant change that is beneficial to the organism.
And you defined earlier, for example, a birth defect is different than a mutation because that species would pass on.
Right. A mutation.
If it's an adequate mechanism.
If it's a genuine mutation.
Yeah. And so thirdly, most mutations that do happen, again, rare and unpredictable, are harmful to the organism.
And that's from an evolutionist, and that's his conclusion. And he's an expert in, or he was, I think he's dead now, but he was an expert in the study of mutations.
Yeah.
H.J. Mueller.
Ray, as always, we're running out of town. We're going to running out of time. We're going to have one more segment with you to talk about this. We'll get through the other seven, and this just gives us an excuse to be back on with you pretty soon.
Be glad to be back.
We'll be back with Ray Mondragon. Stay with us.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, what if you've had a slow leak? Maybe you don't even know it's behind the wall. How dangerous is black mold?
Honestly, it's bigger here than it is anywhere. So my business partner, he ran a company in California for 20 years doing mold mitigation, restoration, flood damage, and that's why we do that here as well. We've done more mold mitigation here in the past 3 years than he's done in 20 years in California.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, has evolutionary science been useful to the world?
Chris, you'd be surprised. Evolutionists say that evolution undergirds all of biology, and yet no truly helpful discovery has come from evolution. It is true that many evolutionists have made amazing discoveries, but these are based on scientific observation of the way things are. How they originated is a different question. It seems to me that if evolution were really a theory of everything, as they claim, then it ought to be obvious. They shouldn't have to rely on silly evolutionary stories to make us believe it. Face it, evolution is unbelievable because it's simply not true. Most people are not gullible enough to think that a frog changed into a prince. Creation is a much better answer, and we learn that when we go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
The final words of Revelation are full of expectation and hope. And that's our study text this week on A New Beginning. Pastor Greg Laurie helps us close out our Revelation studies with a clear view of what our response should be. Don't miss these important studies this week on A New Beginning with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Weekdays at 8:30 a.m. on KLYT. On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome back to ABQ Connect. We're discussing with Ray Mondragon today why mutations are not an adequate mechanism to make evolution work. And he's talked about the first three. The first three are because they are rare, and that's comparatively. There are a lot of mutations happening. We hear about in the news every day the mutations of the COVID-19 virus, and that's actually becoming more the virus is degenerating. Is that correct?
Yes. It's losing information. Every mutation is a loss of information.
Okay.
Now we'll talk some more about that too.
But an evolutionist would say that a mutation, or if the mutation was an adequate mechanism, it's adding information.
It's beneficial by adding information.
Okay. Right. So first of all, beneficial mutations are rare. They're unpredictable. Or mutations altogether are unpredictable. And third, most mutations are harmful to the organism. What's number four?
And H.J. Mueller says you can consider them all bad, which is a killer.
Again, an evolutionist. H.J. Mueller was an evolutionist.
And he's typical. I mean, most of the evolutionists that study in this area would not argue that point. They would not try to refute that. They would agree because that's what the data gives. Another one is what's called by geneticists a genetic burden. And let me try to simplify it and explain it so that we can understand it. A genetic burden is kind of the accumulation of mutations over periods of time. And every organism, all the way from a one-celled animal to humans, are accumulating these mutations over time, such that the evolutionist or the geneticists call it a genetic burden. In other words, it's something that is weighing down the species. So in reality, as time goes on, these accumulate like baggage that weigh us back or weigh us down and actually do us harm, so that our cells are not as vibrant, are not as strong as they were, say, thousands of years ago. In other words, closer to the original creation. So over time, you have the accumulating of the negative effects of mutations that bring something of a burden on the species. And eventually, a species goes extinct as a result of this genetic burden and this accumulation of negative effects of mutations. And it only goes in that negative direction. And this is experienced by every creature, as I said, including one-celled animals, the accumulation of this burden, you might say.
And I want to keep repeating these because mutations, again, are not an adequate mechanism to make evolution work. I want people to be able to have these written down because when you talk with somebody that believes in evolution, they need to understand that evolutionary scientists have come up with seven conclusions. And there's more conclusions, but these kind of summarize the majority points that evolution cannot be based on mutations. And maybe they're still trying to figure out a mechanism, but I suspect that what they really need to do is look at the creator.
Right.
I mean, that's propaganda, I guess, because that's our bias, but I also believe it's true.
Well, it reflects reality, whereas evolution does not. Mm. And if you want to live in the real world and really see things from the reality perspective, then you want to be objective in looking at the data. And when we look at the data says that mutations are not an adequate mechanism for evolution. Therefore, evolution cannot be.
Yeah. And here's the first four. The mutations are rare. And again, lots of mutations happen in organisms, including human bodies, but they're not passed on. It's not something that's to the benefit of the species. Number two, they're unpredictable. Number three, they're harmful. There's an accumulated number four genetic burden.
Right.
Which again would imply that life is not getting more fresh and renewed. We are degenerating.
We are degenerating.
Yes.
Exactly. In fact, this is what the Bible teaches, by the way. We could expand if we had more time on that. Maybe next time we can talk some more about it. This is the indication that the Bible gives us and answers a lot of questions that we would have, particularly about the early chapters in Genesis. But we'll save that for another occasion. Number five, not only are they harmful, but in the medical field, doctors view mutations as pathological. That's their medical term. In other words, a lot of diseases that we know about are actually the result of mutations. And in fact, mutations generally cause disease and problems rather than advance a species forward or cause it to be more viable. So number five is pathological.
Now, do we pass on diseases from generation to generation?
Well, yeah. Yeah, we or the susceptibility to some. Mm-hmm. But some problems that we have are as a result of mutations that are passed on to other
generations.
Look,
and I don't want to minimize or hurt anybody's feelings. I know there's people dealing with tragedy in life. There's a propensity to some disease or some pathological condition, and people die, and we understand that.
Well, we have the genetics.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at it on the genetic level, we may have the genes that produce these pathological problems.
Well, the reason I didn't want to sound insensitive is I'm looking at the opposite of this. Mm-hmm. An evolutionary scientist would say, gee, if you as a dad can run a 14-second 100-meter dash, your children are going to evolve so they can run 10 seconds. Well, if that was true, we'd be down to about 1.5-second 100-meter dashes, right?
Yeah.
And so all I'm trying to do is exaggerate the point that there are not mutations happening. You could take whatever segment of history of mankind you want to take, whether you believe in a young Earth or an old Earth, you're not going to find any math that's going to support
right.
That the species is
advancing.
Advancing. Yeah, yeah. You just can't find it.
In fact, on that biological level, that genetic burden is exactly that. In other words, it's the very opposite of evolution. Mm. Very opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. So pathological. And then what's rejection mean, number six?
Number six, that means that if there is at least a drastic mutation, the species in general rejects, and we could illustrate that, you know, when we have deformities, if that were to be passed on, you'd have to have a partner. But in general, we kind of shun and we don't find them attractive and we don't mate with them. And this is especially true amongst the animal kingdom as well. And not only that, but in some cases, in fact, many cases, mutations cause sterility as well. In other words.
So that would be the example with a horse and a mule.
Or
a horse and a donkey, you produce a mule,
right.
But that cannot reproduce.
Right. So that is a problem. So that's what we mean by rejection.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never thought about that before. I know a friend of mine. He doesn't have horses. He has mules. And I never knew that you can't breed mules.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating. Again, that is.
That's a good illustration. That's
something you can observe.
Right. Exactly. And that occurs throughout the animal kingdom, not just mules or humans.
Talk to about number seven, information is lost when there's a mutation rather than gained.
There has never been an observation of a mutation that added information. Now, when you talk about the DNA molecule, you're talking about a library of information. And in humans, it's a huge library, bigger than Zimmerman Library, of volumes of information that is utilized in order to reproduce.
You got to put this in terms my small brain can understand. Is this a gigabyte of information or a terabyte?
More than a terabyte.
So it's a big
library.
It's a hard drive full of information.
Full of information that specifies every aspect of who we are. It specifies your blonde hair, specifies your blue eyes, specifies your 6'7", 6'6"
height. Anyway.
Every aspect of who we are.
How come you didn't bring up my vertical leap of the 42 inches?
Well, it's, your DNA specifies that
because
as well.
Because you wanted to stay in reality, right? That's where we are.
That's right. But the point being is there has never been an observation of a mutation that advances the information in the DNA molecule. Every observation of a mutation is a loss of information. So that's number seven. And this is the result of research.
This is research by evolutionary scientists. This is not the creation scientists attacking evolution.
No. This is evolutionists, their conclusions. Evolution requires a gain of information. You need advancement. You need something that moves a species forward or upward, you might say. And mutations don't provide that. That's why even when we talk about viruses that you brought up, these viruses that are mutating are losing information. So they are degenerating. They're adapting, yes, but they're losing information. And the more they mutate, the more information they lose and the more viable they will become.
Ray, talk to me about how our listeners can take the information they've heard you talk about today and check it out. Is there additional information on your website?
Well, I've got talks, but I don't have any specific.
But you have areas. A bibliography.
Yeah, lots of books. There's a bibliography on my website. And you can look up some of these creation science textbooks. But I would even go even into, say, Zimmerman Library and look up some of these in some microbiological books. A book I would recommend by a man that is was an evolutionist. I don't know if he still is. But Michael Denton has written an outstanding book. The title of it is Evolution in Crisis, and he's a microbiologist, so he's an expert in that, and the book is a little technical. It's hard to read, but it deals with the microbiology, and he titles his book Evolution in Crisis for the very reasons that we're talking about, because there's no mechanism for one, and the science of microbiology actually destroys the concept of evolution. And it's in crisis because there's no alternative explanation. And that's the conclusion of his book. In fact, he calls it, in a quotation that I often use, I don't know if I brought it with me. I don't think I did. But he basically says that eventually evolution will essentially be considered the, can't remember, he has a descriptive word, but basically the myth of the 20th century. Now, he writes his book. It's over 20 years old now, and he uses 20th century, but we could say the same.
And that's fascinating to me that these are not all new facts that we've been discussing today.
This is
data that's been available for a lot of years, but I don't know whether or not people are finally getting the courage to talk about it. But what's fascinating is we'll just keep teaching the same old thing to our kids until we figure out another substitute for God.
Right.
Why don't we start teaching about God, Ray?
Well, the hardness of man's heart.
Amen. Ray, thank you so much for spending time with us
today.
Thank
you.
It's always a joy, and I look forward to talking to you next month.
Great.
All right.
Look forward to it.
We'll talk to you soon.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosque Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosque Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.on.